isn't actually any more profound. What you're saying isn't any more profound than if you weren't smoking. It's just that your judgments about it have changed. The dangers of being overwhelmed by bad psychological stuff. It's called bad tripping, yeah. Yeah, yeah. excuse. I think that if you're going to use powerful psychedelic agents, that with mild ones, you will come up to the edge of your deeply repressed material. But usually the mild ones won't force you into it. They'll just force you up to the edge of it, and you'll feel some fear, but you'll push against it. When you use more powerful psychotropic agents, like LSD, you will be forced into those. The mystical place you're looking for is behind those things, going through the unconscious into the superconscious or into the whatever you want to call that place behind it. Now, the preparations to avoid that are having a guide with whom you are sharing the truth so clearly that when that stuff comes up, you can share that, you can open with that person and go with that. And you can go, if the chemical is powerful enough, it actually takes you right through that so fast you don't have a chance to get neurotic. I mean, this is when it's really powerful. It just goes so fast. If it's less powerful, you can go into the psychologically repressed stuff and get really depressed, frightened. It will imprint. You will have a bad trip. You'll probably have about 10 hours of hell. You'll come back. You'll say, I never want to use that again. And it'll probably take you several months to get over the trauma of having opened to that stuff. That's usually the way it works with those kinds of bad trips. It's not a permanent thing, except in very rare cases where it opens something the person can't deal with and they have a psychotic flip that they don't return from. That's the probabilities of that are reasonably slight, but that does happen. It does happen. And as I say, the way to avoid that is through preparation, through a guide, through trusting your own intuitive heart as to whether or not you should be doing this or not. When somebody, I never say to somebody, you should take this chemical. I will prepare them and tell them, educate them as to what I understand about all of it. And then I say to them, trust your heart. And even if we've made all preparations and they arrive and they've traveled a great distance and they say, I'm feeling a little uncertain, I say, then don't. Because that uncertainty, if you feel you've been pushed into it by social pressure or by expectation and you don't feel right for it, those are real good conditions for having a bad trip. And each person knows what they should avoid. They know what they can handle. I really trust that. I would never decide what another human being should do with their consciousness. I don't feel I have a moral right to do that. I don't have a right to say, you shouldn't take this medicine because you aren't stable enough. I'll say, this is what happens. And if they say to me, do you think I should take the medicine? I may say no or yes. But I generally will not say anything about that. It's up to the individual. Because each individual human heart knows what they should do. I really trust that. It is not necessary at all for people. It is not necessary at all for mystical experience. It's not necessary for transformation. Neither is a guru. Neither is meditation. These are all practices. They're all methods and they're all traps. Everyone is a trap. All right? So I could give the same thing for meditation and you could say, well, I get a feeling you're saying it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary. It's just another method. All right, we've got to go on because we've got a group here with questions and we're running behind in time. That answers your question, I take it. Next.
I've been smoking pot for 22 years. I've been able to be in the witness position with it. I've seen that for me, it has been a very good medicine. It has been part of high openings, and it's helped me in my playfulness and in creativity. Some of my best shamanic journeys. It's been good for me in a lot of ways. I have not felt most of the time a guilt around it. I felt good about it. In the last few years, between a lot of the politicized media hypes about it and just the whole war on drugs coming down, I've begun to feel somewhat confused about whether I am in a state of denial about it or whether I can be the responsible, aware, open human being that I feel I am and be a pot smoker. Can you address that from your enlightened perspective?
Clearly, you and I both see how pot can be a method for opening you to receiving and tuning to planes that are not available to you all the time. But that raises an interesting question of whether or not the use of something to come into some place is reinforcing the fact that you aren't it without it. And it's very interesting to examine who you are without it, as much without getting into a value judgment that it's bad. It's just, it's like every method is a trap. It's like meditators get addicted to their meditation. And the game isn't to become a meditator, the game is to be free. And it's free of your method, whatever the method is. So the interesting question is to examine, like if you take, and you may have done that, like you take a 6-month break from it, and then you see where you are, what you're doing, what's about. You've got to give it long enough for it to get out of your system and get all the effects. I have noticed in my own life, and that's my chemistry, and it can't be extrapolated to other people necessarily, but I'll share it with you, that if I'm in a situation and I say, if I took a joint, I could be, this situation could be more. And I do it, and I experience it being more. First of all, the next day is less. Okay? So that in order to make the next day more, I have to take dope again to make the next day more. That's the first thing I've noticed about myself. As I said, don't extrapolate. I'm just giving you this. That there is a cost. There's a cost in my wanting more of this moment. I don't get it free in my body chemistry because there's a refractory period, and then I have to smoke more to do it. Now, there are a couple of other things about that moment where I want more. Like, I used to feel that when I smoked, and I, for years, I would take a puff of a joint before I gave a lecture. Because basically, I felt that people were asking me to connect them with the spirit, and I felt that what I was wasn't enough for what they were asking. But if I took a puff of a joint, I would do something which would make what I offered them more. And I was said, in my mind, I was smoking that joint as an offering to them. I used to say, I don't want this stuff. I've got to take it for them. Okay? Judith, who is a very old and dear friend, said to me one day, you know, you're under the illusion that when you smoke, what you say is more profound and more spiritually true than when you don't smoke. She says, I do not find that to be true, and she has listened to me ad nauseum. And when I analyze that, I realize that what changed when I smoked was my judgment about what I was saying, not what I was saying. That I was saying the same thing, I was having the same experience, but I was not as harsh on myself about it, so I was feeling different. And that had a cyclical feedback. If I say blup, and then I don't say, well, that wasn't too good. If I say that wasn't too good, I get tight, and then the next thing I say is a result of that tightness, and then I start a whole sequence of getting tighter and tighter. While if I say blup, and then I say, gee, that was pretty good, then I open up, and then the next thing is more open. And more. So in a way, there are these cycles that spin back, and I do, independent of what Judith says, think that I sometimes am wiser with dope than without it. However, I it affected me a lot when she said that, because I began to realize that That was feeding my own sense of inadequacy. My use of dope was feeding my own sense of inadequacy. And I started to say, in effect, to people, look, this is who I am, and this is what I am, and if it's not enough, don't come. Don't come back. This is what I am. Because it's weird when people have paid to be in your presence for you to enunciate wisdom. It's a funny role. I mean, and I know the hype of it, and we all know, but still it's going on. It's happening. And part of my problem with dope was the illegality of it. That I had to have it knowing that I couldn't share the fact that I had it with other people, because I was jeopardizing my own freedom by doing that. So that had a cost. There was a cost in having a method which was illegal. Okay, that's part of it. Not that illegality is appropriate or right, but there was a cost in it. I respect the fact that people can use chemicals sacramentally and use them in a way to open and bring them close to the spirit. And I think that you're doing it pretty well, the way I hear you talking about it. You just have to be willing to be very straight with yourself, to examine again and again whether you're copying out. There is no long-term physiological damage that anybody knows about. No, there's no brain damage. I mean, the research is just I've been through it, I've studied it, and some of my most profound friends at Johns Hopkins, at Harvard, and all have studied the data, and it is no stuff about human and brain damage, okay? Well, what it does is it shifts motivation. Things that you thought were important aren't, and other things are, and it's not clear whether that's so bad, you know? Not so bad. It gets you out of the kind of a motivational patterns that the culture, that it doesn't make you as adaptable to the cultural motivational scheme. It's not so bad, you know. I'm not sure. It sure does shift motivation, absolutely. What about what? Depression? Well, that's an individual matter, that some people, when they use chemicals, either they go into a depression or they... What it does, it's interesting that you're talking about depression when you use it or depression afterwards? Maybe what? 5 years after? No, I wouldn't think it is psychogenically linked. I don't think it's psychedelically linked. Oh, yeah, sure, you can have a depression afterwards. I mean, the depression can be psychogenic in the sense that you see the beauty of what it's like not to have those inhibitions, and then you get caught back in and you feel lousy. Or it can be purely chemical. It can be that your body used up certain chemicals, and that in the refractory period when those chemicals are absent, you go into a depression. It can be somatogenic as well as psychogenic. Sure, that can happen. I think it's interesting, and you want to trust yourself, be aware of the paranoia in the culture, be aware of the data, be aware of the shifts in the way in which you fit into the world. I mean, I have watched people take drugs and lose interest in most of the things of life and drop out of school and do all those things, and you say, gee whiz, that's a drug casualty. And then I see them 15 years later, and they came out, and they went through mental hospitals and all that stuff, and I see them 15 years later, and they're more of a mensch than somebody that went through the whole Harvard curriculum and graduate school and all that stuff. You know, I don't want to advocate it, because, I mean, any simplistic thing isn't the right thing, but you really have to see the game as more interesting than the narrow band that the culture defines as appropriate behavior. Yeah. I'll tell you something. What's shifted in me was for the first 15 years after 1961, when I first turned on and realized and opened to the spirit, and it was drugs that did it for me. After that, always what I wanted to do was come back into that sweetness. And then there was a point where I wanted to get free more than I wanted to get high. And I became more interested in what brings me down than what gets me out there. And I started to work with my lows, with my depression, with my sadness, with the deadness. And I'd be in a situation, I'd say, this is really boring. And I know if I took a joint, it would open it all up and I'd see the beauty again. And then I'd say, no, I'll just, this is really boring. And I'd sit with the boring, and as I opened into the boringness, the beauty would be there. And I began to see that I was always afraid of the states when I wasn't turned on, because they weren't enough. And I had to deal in my mind with that thing of more is better, which is a state of mind. And I just wanted to play with it. And I've begun to see that as I stop feeding that more is better and shift to enough is enough, it starts to shift. And I'm not motivated to constantly keep changing my consciousness for it to be enough. I've really been working with enoughness. And it isn't always wonderful, and sometimes it's remarkable. And sometimes without dope, I'm just like blown away by the beauty and the preciousness of it all too. And so all I'm saying is you've just got to examine how you're using it and what it's feeding in your long-term game of your journey into being a free human being. That's all.